So, yes, my name is Steve Rothschild. I'm a family physician by training. I started working with community health workers in an early part of my career back in 1984, and I have done work with promoters in my practice, and now for the last 8 years or so, research. And I'm very, very pleased that two of my co-investigators are here, Dr. Molly Martin and Dr. Susan Swider, so I have moral support, and they'll take all the tough questions. We have no declarations. And the presentation is in keeping with APHA guidelines. So this morning, what I'd like to do is go over the MATCH study, the Mexican American Trial of Community Health Workers that we recently completed. I want to give you a brief presentation only on our primary outcomes. We have a mass amount of data and secondary outcomes, but we're going to just focus on the primary outcomes today. And then I'm hoping that we'll actually have room for some dialogue on a question that our team has been struggling with, which is, what are our next steps? What additional studies are necessary in the wake of these findings? And then how these findings and others can be used to advocate for community health workers. And then very much at the end, a very brief thought experiment about what if community health workers were a medication instead of promotores de salud, and we'll kind of hopefully have some thought on that. In this group, you know, the evidence about community health workers, it doesn't need to be belabored, but we obviously are aware that there's a significant body of evidence supporting community health workers to improve access to care, to improve follow-up in clinic settings, to increase knowledge on pre-post testing, some on behavior change, and more modest improvements in health status to date. But the limitations of the study, good morning, Mr. Harrington, the limitations of the studies to date in many ways is that they don't necessarily follow the robust randomized controlled trial design that a new medication, that drugs are put through before they enter the marketplace. And if we look at a couple of the evidence-based reviews on community health workers, they cite some of the limitations of our literature to date. This week, and anytime you get people talking about community health workers together, you realize very quickly that we have a very heterogeneous intervention, that people talk about community health worker roles in very, very different ways. And so many studies lack a clear conceptual model of what they believe the promotora is going to do and how that will result in the desired outcome. Many studies fail to state their hypotheses, what they're trying to test, before getting started. There's oftentimes relatively weak attention to the intervention fidelity. How do we know what promotoras do when they're in the field? We know that they do amazing work. But how do we really know? And how do we know that, you know, the first promotora and the second promotora and the third promotora are all doing más o menos more or less the same thing? We don't oftentimes know that in the research literature. Many times there's a lack of control groups. Outcome assessment is often, in many studies, done by the community health workers themselves, which in a drug trial, we wouldn't want the person who knew what drug everybody was taking to be doing the evaluation. So it is in that context that we designed MATCH. MATCH is a behavioral randomized controlled trial of efficacy, meaning that we try to create idealized situations. An effectiveness trial looks at sort of the real world down and dirty. Our conditions are relatively strongly community-based, but we were very, very rigorous in our methods, as we'll talk about in a moment. The population we looked at were Mexican Americans with type 2 diabetes. We defined Mexican American. We said either you were born in Mexico, or one of your parents was born in Mexico, or two of your grandparents. So there was a definition at the outset. We also kind of said that because our goal was to prevent complications of diabetes, we wanted to have people who had not yet suffered significant major complications. So no amputations, no dialysis, no strokes. Some of our patients did have heart disease, but the majority of them were did not have the major end organ complications. And our a priori, our basic hypotheses were, number one, that after 2 years of intervention, our participants within the community health worker arm would have reductions in A1C in the level of glucose control relative to the control group, and the percentage with blood pressure at American Diabetes Association targets at goal blood pressure less than 130 over 80 would be greater in our intervention arm than our control arm. And if you go to clinicaltrials.gov, which is the registry of studies, that was posted before we, you know, had our data, before we were unblinded. So that is out there. So we defined our outcomes in advance. Our intervention was a diabetes self-management training program delivered by community health workers. This is based on Bandura's theory of self-efficacy, and we'll expand on that in a moment. We did 36 home visits over 24 months. People go, 36 visits? You know, we were very committed to an intensive intervention. We didn't want to do a 6 or 8 visit piece, have a negative trial, and have, okay, community health workers don't work. We wanted to really be aggressive about this. And this is one-on-one coaching in the home. The protocol, what we'd set out to do was every 2 week visits for 1 year and then once a month in the second year. Our goal at the end was get 36 visits in. So because people have lives and every 2 weeks sometimes becomes every 3 or 4, or I'm going to Mexico for a while, the visits got stretched out. The majority were still delivered in the first year, but it wasn't quite as clean as it says on the slide. And our content came from two broad areas. One was the Association of American Diabetes Educators diabetes-specific self-management behaviors. So on the right, left, sorry, more coffee. On the left, you'll see the 7 self-management behaviors that our promotores were trained to talk to their participants about. They could choose these in any order, and the participants and they would pick out, okay, today I really want to learn how to use my glucose meter. Or, I check my glucose, but I really don't know what to do when it says 350 or 60. And so we instructed our community health workers at each visit cover one main and maybe one secondary topic, but don't try to cover all 7. And then in exploring the diabetes self-management behaviors, and the person would begin to develop an action plan, identify what new behavior they wanted to try between visits, they had self-management skills that could be used in a variety of areas, but that we were applying to diabetes self-management. And these included, okay, I don't know what I should do, let's brainstorm that together. And our promotores called that lluvia de ideas, which we love. We talked about writing things down, whether it's a glucose log or checking off on the calendar that you took your medications and so on. We talked about environmental restructuring. I always forget to take my medication. Well, where could you put the medication in the home that's safe but that you would see each day? Or every time I see my kids, you know, cookies and snacks, I eat them when the kids aren't home. How do we restructure the environment? We talked about how you seek out social support and using strategies to reduce stress. So if you think about this, this is a lot of material, and it's fairly sophisticated, and our promotores were able to do this. And we know that our promotores were able to do this because we spent a lot of time focusing on intervention fidelity, knowing that what we asked our community health workers to do is what they did. So they had a one-page worksheet, sort of a check the box. What topics did you teach today? What tools did you use? We asked them to self-rate their self-efficacy. All the encounters in the home were audio taped. And our psychologists on the project listened to those audio tapes at random, both to give feedback on the behavioral coaching, but also to make sure there was a matchup. Average time on visits was about 90 minutes. And participants were really satisfied with that. What did our control group get? Because remember we said we were blinding people to, you know, what arm they were in. Obviously they would know if they got a community health worker, they got a newsletter. But when they signed up for the study, they were told, we are comparing two means to teach you about how to take care of your diabetes. You might get a newsletter. It'll be English and Spanish. It'll be sent every 2 weeks for a year and then once a month in the second year. Or you might have someone come to your home to do coaching with you. The newsletter, which we call Diabetes Action, 36 newsletters, same exact content, the same diabetes self-management training, the same self-management skills that the promotores were training in. So pretty even. The difference here, the only difference is community health workers. When we went to do outcome assessment, again, our community health workers didn't do the assessment. We had research assistants. They were told, don't ask. We had a sort of a don't ask, don't tell policy. You know, they would say to the participants when they arrived in the home to check blood pressure and get the blood sample and all that, you know, don't tell me about what's been going on. I really just need to ask you these questions because I can't know what group you're in. Now, sometimes the participants would say, oh, you know, I love Lola so much. She's so wonderful. And we would, you know, there's only so much you could do. And, you know, we did train the research assistants to stick their fingers in the air and go na 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 na, but that didn't work. But we tried to maintain our blinding of outcome assessment as vigorously as we possibly could. Another little subtle thing here that was new to us as we went through our methods was, you know, sometimes people are hard to find, right, for the follow-up. And our community health workers, because they would know where their participants were, had information. We didn't use that information for the research assistants. And the reason we didn't is because we wouldn't have that information for the control group, right? We wouldn't know that, we wouldn't have that feedback. Everything has to be even in a randomized controlled trial. So the research assistants had to use all the means at their disposal to find people, but we couldn't use the information from the community health workers. Nonetheless, and we'll talk about this in a moment, we had 84% retention. We had huge retention at 2 years. Just to tell you just a brief thumbnail of who we're working with, our median age was 54 years. The vast majority were Spanish speakers, over 90% were primary Spanish speakers. Most of the intervention visits were delivered in Spanish. This was a low acculturation group, two-thirds women, one-third men, mostly married. Over half of our participants had less than a sixth grade education. Only a quarter had finished high school or gone beyond. And close to three-quarters reported that it was somewhat hard or very hard to pay for basic necessities of life. So this is a low SES group. This is also a group that is relatively less healthy than we would like. The mean A1C, the diabetes control measure that we want to see below 7, was 8.3. Only about 30% of our participants at baseline had A1Cs that were at control levels. You can see that a third had A1Cs that were over 9 at outset, being very poor control. In addition, over half had blood pressures over the target determined by the American Diabetes Association, which is less than 130 over 80, with a mean systolic blood pressure of 131. We can see that. One of the really striking pieces is that this was a group that had significant problems with overweight and obesity. 14% of our population had BMIs less than 25. There were more people who had BMIs over 40. So, you know, this is a group that a lot of studies would go, we're not touching them because they're already that ship has already sailed. But clearly, this is the population that we have in the city of Chicago and around the country. So now the cool part, the primary outcomes. We randomized 144. We have 24-month completion data on 84%, which is pretty good for a highly mobile population. Let me go back for a moment. We did do one other inclusion criteria that I didn't talk about, which is we asked people at the time of enrollment, do you anticipate being out of the country for more than 4 months in the next year? Because in Chicago, we have a Mexican-American population that are like snowbirds. They, you know, go home over the winter months. And if you've spent winter in Chicago, who can blame them? But that probably fed into our success somewhat. But we, you know, they wanted to become part of the study. A third of our participants, these are completed visits. And you can see that all the way over on the right, under the bar that says 36, 31.5% of the population got all 36 visits. So close to a third. Another third got at least 18 visits. So two-thirds of the population get at least half the dose. And again, if we compare this to a drug trial, you know, drug companies, you know, when they do randomized trials or when NIH does a randomized controlled trial, they can't make people take medications. You do everything possible to improve adherence. We're pretty happy with this. One piece that I would point out is the bar all the way over on the left. 11% of our population got zero visits. They moved. They didn't want to see the community health worker. They'd hope to get the newsletter, whatever. Those people, even on the left, are included in our analysis for community health workers, same as you would with a drug study. Once you're randomized, you always stay in that arm. So we follow that very strictly. So what did we find? At 1 year, A1C levels down by 0.48. At 2 years compared to control, and that's 0.3. One is baseline, number two is the one-year visit, and three is the second-year visit, and the blue line that's going down, that's our intervention arm. So you can see a wide separation. The placebo arm, the newsletter arm, shows actually a slight worsening and flattening off. The community health workers improved at 1 year and continue to improve even at 2 years. Really important finding for us. A disappointing finding was blood pressure. We did not achieve that. Our blood pressure control improved at the end of 1 year at visit two, where we hit over 57% had blood pressures at goal. But by the end of year two, it had dropped back down again. So that was a little disappointing. But for A1C, we achieved what we set out to do. It's important to realize, as in any drug trial, were there any adverse effects? I know we sometimes think, well, it's a promotor intervention, but if they had gotten too strict on blood pressure or A1C control, someone could have gotten hypoglycemic. They could have fallen because they were exercising. We tracked emergency room visits. We tracked hospitalizations. We saw no increase in hypoglycemia, no increase in complications, and we saw a low dropout rate. So let's talk costs. And this is where I want to pivot into a policy discussion briefly. Because you and I all hear this. Oh, this is a great intervention, but who's going to pay for it? It's so expensive, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, I'm a little bitter. It didn't work for a long time, as have all of you. If we look at three medications that are widely used for control of diabetes, and these are some of the new ones in the last few years, we can look at nitaglenide, which has a monthly average retail price of about $60. And if you go to the drug company's website, they proudly proclaim that their studies at 26 to 52 weeks, so 6 months to a year, have reduced A1C anywhere from 0.1 to 0.8. Sitagliptin, $175 a month, 0.6 to 0.8. Insulin glargine, the long-acting insulin, $112 a month if they're taking 30 units a day, obviously more for someone who's on more than 30 units. We paid our community health workers about $15 an hour with benefits, with health insurance, $85 a month. And we have outcomes that are comparable. So a couple of questions for the group that I want to leave you with. One is, you know, what should our next steps be? We achieved one of our two primary outcomes. We're looking at our secondary data right now to see, but it doesn't look like medication adherence improved. We saw modest changes in physical activity, but not huge, not a lot of self-reported diet changes. So we don't really know how this works. We could drill into that a little bit and do studies to look at those intermediate steps. We could modify the intervention to put greater emphasis on blood pressure control or other diabetes risk factors like cholesterol, like smoking, and so on. We could do an evaluation to see what happens after you discontinue the intervention. Speaking personally, I'm always a little concerned about that. Nobody asks the medication to keep working after somebody stops taking it. And yet we expect our community health worker intervention to change everything, and then they can walk away and nothing, you know, and then why doesn't it continue to work? It may be time for a multi-center trial instead of like a highly controlled efficacy trial where we do this in multiple cities and settings across the country. Can we take this to a national scale? Those are some of the key questions we're wrestling with right now. Regardless, we think it's time for, you know, really using data like this to support the action agenda for community health workers, to educate policymakers, payers, healthcare professionals about the benefits of community health workers in improving clinical outcomes in a cost-effective way, and simultaneously advocating for policies that support community health worker development and career ladders and reimbursement. We feel strongly that this is a profession. This is something we need to support. So we have an effective, safe intervention. It translates best clinical practices to populations that are marginalized, that are in need. So the question is there any reason to wait to disseminate this widely? Because if community health workers were a drug, you know, open up the bottle and out pops the Promotora, what would we be doing? And so the thought experiment I'm going to leave you with is, if instead of this in sort of the academic, we reduced A1C, but yeah, I was instead the CEO of a company called Progressive Diabetes. Last slide, while that comes up, I just want to thank my co-authors. Sorry. The one trouble with a multimedia presentation. And especially, went too far.